We are back. I am Paula Gordon. This is the Paula Gordon Show, and Bill Russell has, of course, joined me. Dr. Leonard Schlain is our guest, and Bill is panting.
I want to participate. It's easy to assume that everybody knows what left and right brain means, and I'd like to digress a little bit and talk a little, just briefly, about the hemispheric difference in the brains, because I think most of us don't really think about that all day.
Science doesn't really do a very good job helping
Well, you know,
with that.
Every vertebrate from a fish forward has a bilobe brain. And each hemisphere...
L-O-B-E lobe?
Lobe, you know, bilobe, you know, two hemispheres. And whether it's a fish or whether it's a dog or an elephant or whatever animal, they have two lobes to their brain. And in all those other animals, each lobe does what the other lobe does. It's just a mirror image. But human beings have something known as hemispheric lateralization, which means that the sides of the brain look alike, but they're functionally different. And the reason for this is that we have this incredibly complicated program called language. And language is so complicated, it requires so much real estate in the brain that nature designated the left hemisphere of right-handed people to lay down these tracks. Now, language is very linear. It's very sequential. So nature said, well, as long as we're laying down these linear tracks for language, let's put arithmetic and logic and causality and determinism and reason in there, too. The right hemisphere retained the capacity to see the world all at once, holistically, intuitively, and it retained the capacity to recognize faces and images. You know, you're walking down the street and you see this balding, obese, wrinkled old man, and you instantly recognize that this is your college roommate from 40 years ago. It is an astonishing skill that we have. So recognizing images and seeing them all at once, as opposed to deciphering words, which is very linear, are two complementary skills that we humans possess. And it is my contention that when you introduce reading and writing, that reinforces one hemisphere at the expense of the other. And that manifests itself in culture in three ways: the disappearance of goddesses, the taking away of women's rights, and an abhorrence of images.
Up to that point, we were on fairly familiar territory. But once you got to those three pieces,
things really are blockbusters. Those are major cultural shifts. One of the things that most surprised me as I read The Alphabet Versus the Goddess was you really altered my sense of time. Now you say that also lives in the left hemisphere. It's a linear thing. But you gave me a different sense that Homo sapiens sapien, or one of those, has been around for more or less 3 million years. But that for 2,999,000 of them, anyway, only 10,000 years have we been dealing with radically new things that start with agriculture, with that particular set of numbers. But I got a different sense of the human animal having been around a long time. And part of what you're saying is, boom, with the introduction of language and then more recently alphabet writing, that things really changed with who we are, not only how we think, but who we are in relation to each other.
Well, you know, Sophocles once warned that nothing vast enters the life of mortals without a curse. I think your listeners would all agree with that. If you won the lottery tomorrow and you got all those millions of dollars, you could count on something unpleasant being in there with all that wonderfulness. And I think that everybody would agree that the invention of writing was vast. I mean, it's one of the most important technological revolutions to occur to humankind. But what was the price that we paid for that? I mean, you know, nothing comes without a price. So in the book, what got me going on this is, you know, I went on an archaeological tour of the Mediterranean sites about 8 years ago, and our guide kept telling us the same story. She said, you know, this temple of Poseidon or Zeus or Apollo, whoever it was, this was originally dedicated to a goddess, and then unknown persons for unknown reasons rededicated it to a god at a later date. And I thought, gee, you know, there's overwhelming archaeological and historical evidence that both men and women worshipped goddesses in the ancient world. Women were priestesses and performed major sacraments. Property passed through the female line. And then along came Western culture, and then the three religions of the West, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, do not have a goddess. Women, until very recently, were banned from conducting even the simplest religious sacrament, and property began to pass exclusively through the male line. So I wanted to understand what happened here. What event in culture could have been so immense and so pervasive as to literally change the sex of God? And when I looked into all the current theories about this, I found that they were all kind of lacking. They weren't quite convincing. And it occurred to me that the goddess began to lose power about the same time that people started to learn to read and write. And by the time they learned the alphabet, she disappeared. The three books, the three alphabetic sacred texts, the Old Testament, New Testament, and Quran, are very anti-feminine. And there's no, and God doesn't have an image. How strange. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no images, and images, of course, are perceived by the right hemisphere.
Which stands in striking contrast to experiences where the alphabet is not part of the experience, or at least until later, and the right brain, where the images live, you continue to have goddesses. You continue to have and images of goddesses, that these blockbuster events don't happen.
Well, it's very interesting that the first book ever written in an alphabet is the Old Testament, 900 BC. And the Israelites...
Is that really true, the very first book?
Yeah, I mean, I tell that to people, and they always say, no, there must have been something earlier. And I say, well, name it. You know, there were books written in hieroglyphics and cuneiform, but the first book written in an alphabet is the Old Testament. And the Israelites came out of Egypt, and Egypt was probably the most goddess-loving culture in the ancient world. I mean, women had a higher status there than any place else. Now, the Old Testament, the most important part of the Ten Commandments, and the First Commandment is probably the most revolutionary sentence ever transcribed. First Commandment states, I am the Lord thy God, there is no other. Now, the Bible doesn't actually state what this deity's gender is, but all of the nouns and all of the adjectives used to describe this deity are masculine. I mean, Lord, ruler, host, king of the universe. Someone can safely assume that this deity is a man. And if he's a man and he's the only one, then that means that the world was created without the help of a goddess. Up until the time that sentence was written, there were no people anywhere in the world who believed that a man alone could create the universe. It was usually a woman alone, or a man and a woman together, but not a man alone. If I were to lay the Ten Commandments on the table here and ask your listeners to put them in the sequence of their relative importance for their life today, I'd venture to say that everyone would put as number two, don't murder. But oddly enough, that's not number two. The second most important rule of righteous living is make no images. And it isn't just graven images. It's no images of any kind, anything that flies in the air or creepeth on the ground. So let's step back for a moment. The first culture in the world to adopt an alphabetic sacred text, this is the first culture in the world that doesn't have a goddess, and that bans art. So why is art more dangerous than murder?
And the answer is...
Well, I think that cultures that become enthralled by alphabet literacy denigrate the right hemispheric way of knowing. And the right hemispheric way of knowing is very image dependent, as opposed to the written word.
And when you say enthralled, I think you mean that technically. You enthralled them. That is to say that we become slaves to it.
The word spell has a couple different meanings. You know, there's to spell a word, and there's to cast a spell.
Oh, my.
And clearly, alphabets cast a spell on anybody that uses them. You know, when a literate person from the West meets a non-literate person in a traditional society, they can barely talk to each other. I mean, there's such a difference in worldviews, whether they're Hopi Indians or Iroquois or Kung Bushmen. And throughout history, that's been so. Well, alphabets ingrain a certain way to see time and space and think about reality. And they form very dualistic and egocentric ways of looking at the world, so that you can split off from nature and you feel that you can do to nature whatever you want. And our history of Western culture has been one of the ravishment of nature, and it's only recently that we're starting to change this. Now we're trying to go back and find out, say, what did Chief Seattle say again? I mean, how did he frame that? I mean, maybe we should pay attention to what he said, you know?
This is Dr. Leonard Schlain. When we come back, this doctoring part, I think, is also a very interesting and maybe critical part of how you think. Bill Russell is with me. This is the Paula Gordon Show. I'm Paula, and we will all be back in just a moment. We hope you'll be with us when we return.